Dre. Dad? I asked in a whisper. Surprisingly, when I told Preppy I wanted to use his phone, he'd handed it over without hesitation. His only stipulation was that I make the call on speakerphone, so he could make sure I wasn't calling Connor or Eric to warn them off. It was impossible even if I wanted to do it, considering neither of them had cell phones.
Andrea? Is that you? What time is it?
My dad asked, clearing his throat. I didn't answer, and not just because it didn't matter, but because I had no idea. All I knew was that it was really late. I just hoped it wasn't too late. Daddy, I'm coming home.
Andrea,
he said, followed by a sigh of frustration.
Do you still have the ticket I sent you?
Shit, I said as panic washed over me. My ticket was in my bra, which was now somewhere below the water tower. I started when my dad interrupted.
I'm not sending you another one, Andrea. This is your last chance. I love you, but you need help, and I can get you help, but you have to be on that bus.
I'd find that ticket if it was the last fucking thing I'd ever do. I will be. I promise. I'm coming home. For real this time.
No more lies.
No more lies. I choked out.
Andrea, one more thing.
He warned.
If I go to the bus station to pick you up and you're not there, then this is done. Over. No more excuses. I'm too tired for any more excuses. No more calls, no more chances. If you are not on that bus, then this isn't your home anymore. And I'm not your family.
The threat was a well-deserved one. The result of a classic case of the girl who cried heroin one too many times. I promise I'll be there, I agreed. I looked over at Preppy, who held his hand out for the phone, an unreadable expression on his face. I gotta go. I love you. I'll see you soon.
So, that was the one request. What's next?
Preppy asked, taking the phone, shoving it into his pocket. He flashed me a smile that told me he was up to something. It was all too easy. One minute he wanted to kill me, and the next he wanted to help me. Maybe he had no intentions of letting me go. It didn't matter. I meant what I told my dad. I was going to be on that bus this time, no matter what. Even if it meant I had to kill the man who'd saved my life.
Chapter 5. Preppy. Dre's demands were not at all what I thought they'd be. She didn't even ask for money, and I was so sure she would that I'd have bet my left nut on it. First, she wanted to use my phone to call her dad, which I handed her without hesitation as a sign of trust. I need you to keep one of them alive. Connor, she said, looking to her hands and fidgeting with her fingers. Why? I asked, irritated by her request. Your boyfriend or something?
No,
was all she said. Well, he had to do something to earn that kind of loyalty.
He didn't, but I did. I owe him, she said.
I didn't push her for more because it didn't matter. I helped her down from the tower, found her clothes, shoes, and retrieved her bus ticket from a tree. I even gave her a ride to the bus station to boot because I am a chivalrous motherfucker, even if it was all bullshit. The only place I was planning on letting her go to was to lead me back to the other two douchebags. Asking for me to spare Connor's life showed me that she had some sort of loyalty toward him. So when she said that they were probably heading to Coral Pines to meet with their dealer, it wasn't exactly like I was going to take her word for it. She could have been sending me right into a trap. The second we pulled up to the station, Dre opened the door before it was even in park. Hey, I said, thinking she was about to jump out and try to make a run for it, when she leaned over and puked onto the pavement. H withdrawals are no joke. When she was done heaving, she sat up slowly, wiping her mouth with the back of her hand. She got out and I leaned over the seats to shut the door behind her. She turned around to me and flashed me a sad smile as she stood there clutching her only possession, her bus ticket, to her chest like it was a precious newborn baby. Is your dad a good guy? I suddenly asked, surprising even myself. A good dad? Like, does he spend time with you and take you places? He put food on the table and send you to school? She nodded.
Yeah.
There are a lot of people out there whose dads don't do any of that, or wouldn't give a shit about getting their junky daughter home. So when you get there, try and go easy on the guy, I said, as if I really believed she was going home and not heading back to the male drugged-out version of the Olsen twins. Maybe I did believe it. There was only one way to find out. She smoothed her hair out of her eyes.
Maybe you're Dr. Phil after all, she said,
before disappearing under the shadows of the awning, heading toward the empty bus benches. If she felt as bad as she looked, and she really was getting on that bus, then it was going to be one fuck of a long bus ride to wherever it was she was going. Not fucking likely, I muttered as I pulled back onto the road, and as soon as I cleared the next block, I turned down the dirt road that used to act as the service entrance to the old motel. I parked in the back of the bus station, which wasn't really a station at all, just a small brick building with a flat roof and a ticket window facing the street with a few scattered benches. The light overhead where Dre was sitting was flickering on and off, casting the grassy area in spastic shadows. Shit. Maybe she really was getting on that bus. For a second, I was happy that the kid was going to be reunited with her father. I wasn't messing around when I told her that most people didn't have dads that cared enough to give her an ultimatum like he did. I was about to pull back out when I saw the headlights of a bus pulling into the station. I just decided that I was going to wait for her to get on the bus before I headed to Coral Pines, when suddenly her feet stopped tapping and retracted back into the shadows. Not like she stood up, not like she pulled them back, like she was being dragged. I pulled my gun from my boot and got out of the car, shuffling to the side of the building, my eyes adjusting to focus in the dark until I spotted Dre across the lot. She was being dragged, all right, by her hair, through the parking lot toward the old motel where the neon sign was blinking between vacancy and no vacancy. The man dragging her was almost as thin as she was, but you didn't have to be big to overpower someone as small as Dre. One of the motion lights clicked on and gave me a better view of Dre, whose black eyes were open but glazed over and unfocused. She was foaming out the side of her mouth. "You shouldn't have left," the man muttered, pulling Dre up and over the parking curb, her legs scraping against the ground as he huffed and grunted through his exertion. "You think you can just leave me? You owe me, Dre. Remember that. You can't just go home," he said to a semi-conscious Dre who looked a million miles away. "If I can't go home, then you can't go home. I'm sorry I did that to you," he said more quietly. "But I just gave you some of my new stash, so you should forgive me. It's good shit, the best, and I saved it just for you." I crouched and ran through the shadows from the back of the bus station to the overhang of the motel. As much as I wanted to blow the motherfucker away just for dragging her, I had to wait. Each second was like a decade with my hand already twitching against the trigger. "I'm here, Dre. Connor is going to take good care of you like this from now on. I promise. You'll see. You just can't try and leave again because we are having such a great time and you'll ruin everything," he yelled. "But that's what you do. You ruin things." This was Connor? The one she'd wanted me to keep alive? He took a deep breath, fixing the awkward smile back onto his face. He wiped his forehead with the back of his ratty sleeve before hauling Dre up from underneath his arms, his hands against her tits so he could lift her awkwardly up over the curb. He opened the door of one of the rooms.
"I mean, I'm so sorry, Dre," Connor sniffled. "I mean, I think even though you were mad, that you really did like what we did to you. I think they were good screams. When Eric gets back..."
Connor's voice faded abruptly as he kicked the door shut. The 9 marking the room number fell off one of its nails, becoming a swaying 6 before clambering to the sidewalk. Maybe it was his words. Maybe it was the way he treated her, like he owned her. Maybe it was that this was the guy she'd wanted me to save. But all I knew was that I was going in. Fake promises be damned. What happened next played out like a violent video game, a halo of blur around the edges of my vision as I advanced on the motel room, the gun in my outstretched hands in front of me as I kicked open the door. Connor was crouched low on the floor over Dre, who was lying on her stomach face down on the faded blue shag carpet, her shorts down over her naked ass while the dirtbag fisted his little pecker in his hand. The slam of the door against the wall had Connor looking up with surprise, his reaction delayed by whatever shit was running through his veins.
"Who the fuck are you? Get the fuck out,"
he said, before zoning in on my gun.
"What are you gonna..."
Connor started to ask, his face paling and his bloodshot eyes widening.
"Wait, I know who you are."
"Good. Introductions can be so boring and all," I said. "You know," I scratched my head with the barrel of my gun, "junkies like you give drugs a bad name. You are the very reason some of my favorite party enhancers will never be available and marked down at a discount on the shelves of my local neighborhood Walmart at good old American made-in-China prices." I aimed my gun at his chest. "Move away from her, or I will end you right fucking here." Connor stood up, with his shoulders hunched forward, his softening little pecker hanging out of his zipper as he raised his hands and did as I commanded, stepping back from Dre. I spotted the open bathroom door. "Back. Through there, stand in the shower."
"Please. Please don't shoot me,"
he begged as he shuffled backward. I spared a glance at Dre. Kneeling down, I made sure she was breathing. She was. I flipped her onto her back and turned her head to the side so she wouldn't choke on her own vomit if she started puking again. I followed Connor into the tiny bathroom where he tipped over the rim of the tub, landing on his ass in the shower, pulling down the beige plastic curtain over the top of him.
"I'll do anything. Anything,"
he said, glancing at my crotch.
"Dude, have some fucking self-respect," I said. "Unless that's your thing. You a gay man, Connor?"
He shook his head. His lower lip trembled.
"Listen, I respect anyone's choice to fuck the way they want to fuck and fuck who they want to fuck, but since you're telling me that you're a straight dude, then you've seriously just sank to the very last rung on the junkie ladder, my friend, which, in case you haven't guessed it, is offering to suck another dude's cock."
I've got a problem,"
he said, his feet dangling over the edge of the tub.
"Yeah, you fucking do."
Noticing a fingerprint on my gun, I huffed some air onto it and buffed it off on the rolled-up cuff of my shirt.
"I just need help. I promise I'm really not a bad guy,"
he stammered. I rolled my eyes. "Connor, stop your babbling."
"I believe you, buddy,"
I said, using my most reassuring voice. I crouched down so our eyes were level. Instant relief filled Connor's eyes.
You do? You believe me?"
His hope at getting out of that bathroom alive was downright fucking tangible. I nodded.
"Absolutely I do."
I leaned over and pinched his cheek hard. He flinched but smiled awkwardly.
"I think you're just a confused kid who made some big, big mistakes."
I turned my gun so it wasn't facing him. Connor's eyes nervously followed my every move. I stood up and leaned my hip against the sink, crossing my legs at the ankles. I turned the faucet on and let it run for a second or two before turning it off again. Wiping the grunge off the mirror with my closed fist, I gave my reflection a once-over and straightened my bow tie.
"Thank you. Thank you,"
Connor stammered, attempting to sit up in the tub.
"I'm really a good person. This junk's got me all fucked up. Makes me do stupid shit. Man, I'm so glad you're not gonna shoot me in the fucking head."
"Don't be silly, Connor. I don't shoot people in the head. You know how much blood and gunk gets sprayed around when you go all gangsta willy-nilly and start shooting people in the head?
Let me ask you something, Connor. You ever see a watermelon explode?"
What I meant was... I mean, just thank you for not killing me.
When did I say I wasn't going to kill you?"
I straightened my posture, turned back to Connor and raised my gun, aiming it straight at his chest. I watched the confusion pass through his eyes, followed by realization and then fear.
Wait!
Connor stuttered. The sound of water bouncing off plastic caught my attention as he pissed himself on the fallen shower curtain. I really fucking hate it when that happens, I muttered, the scent of urine immediately unbearably strong in the tiny room and made my eyes water.
No! Please, no!
He cried, holding out his hands in front of his face, even after I told him I wasn't going to shoot him in the head. It was almost like the fucker didn't trust me.
You said you believed me, that you didn't think I was a bad guy.
I let out a long, breathy sigh which turned into a yawn. Not because I was tired, but because Connor and the whole will I or won't I kill him situation was growing boring as fuck. I don't think you're a bad guy at all. I cocked my gun. But unfortunately for you, I squeezed the trigger 3 times, sending pops of bright red splattering across the dull beige shower tile. I am. Chapter 6. Preppy. Sometimes, we as humans set out to do things with purpose and clarity. Other times, we carry the unconscious heroin-addicted thief back to the very house where she'd helped steal your weed plants from because the woman who lives there is a nurse. Humans. Weird fucking animals we are. I carried Dre in through the back door as quietly as I could. I'd wake Myrna shortly, but Dre wasn't showing any signs of overdose, so there wasn't any rush. I carefully shifted the girl in my arms through the door of the guest bedroom. And that's when I noticed the scar on the side of her face, right in front of her ear. It was a faded pink color, so it wasn't super old, and I wondered what could have happened to this girl to cause a scar like that. I shuffled her into the bedroom and set her on the floor. I turned on the shower and propped her against the side of the tub. The deja vu feeling that I knew this girl was overwhelming. Maybe she was in porn? No, because then I'd probably know her name, and bra size, and what her specialty was. I lifted her shirt, and the bruises I'd seen on the tower looked 10 times worse under the harsh bathroom lighting. I knew firsthand that addicts had a tendency to be bruised up, either from the marks, from the needles, getting into fights, or just stumbling around. But these weren't those kinds of bruises. They weren't from a fight. They were from a beating. My eyes drifted down to the bruised and bloodied space between her legs that both thrilled and sickened me. They were from a rape. I swallowed hard and willed my cock to stand down. I tucked her panties into my back pocket for safekeeping and lifted her into the tub, turning the shower head on spray mode so I could wash the dirt and blood from her body. I never gave a shit what twisted thing turned me on. Some people got off on the vulnerable. It was a thing. I Googled it, but I never in my life wished those oddities away before that very moment in that very bathroom. And I had no fucking clue why. I tried to concentrate on washing her, pausing the cloth occasionally to wipe the sweat from my forehead or palm my cock through my pants, but managed to finish washing her and carry her to the bed without coming in my pants. I pulled the blanket over her and she stirred. Her legs fell open, revealing everything to me, and I groaned at the sight. My cock pulsed. I licked my bottom lip and thought of what she tasted like. I needed to know. Just one little lick, and I'd go. I crawled onto the mattress, fully dressed but slightly damp. I hovered over her and leaned down between her thighs. I inhaled deeply. She had the sweetest-smelling pussy. My cock throbbed and my balls ached. I wanted to bottle that shit up and wear it. Pussy perfume. I pressed a closed-mouth kiss over her small buttony clit before flattening my tongue and dragging it over her pussy opening. It was just supposed to be one little lick, but it had turned into a deep kiss. My tongue darted just beyond her pussy lips. A little more, and a little more I took, pushing the tip of my tongue inside her tightness, holding in a groan when I could fully taste her on my tongue. Holy fucking shit. Good wasn't a word for how she tasted. Epic. Her pussy tasted epic. I shamelessly dry-humped the bed, my cock finding little of the friction I needed against the mattress. I pulled back a little, feeling a bite of anger toward whichever of those fuckers had hurt her magical pussy, and hoped it was the one who was no longer breathing and being sent out to the swamp by Smoke and his cleanup crew. I gave her one last long kiss with my tongue, as if I could heal her with my tongue. I sat up on my knees and released my cock from my khakis, groaning at the sensation of it hot and heavy in my hand. I stared down at her spread thighs, her pussy glistening from where my mouth had just been, her taste still fresh on my tongue. I imagined pounding into her with every inch of my cock. As I stroked from root to tip and back again, I wondered if she could take all of me or if I'd have to ease up on her and give her little by little. Then I imagined what she would look like with my hands wrapped around her throat, what she'd sound like gagging on my cock. I pumped harder, faster. I teased the tip of my cock, and just as I felt like I was about to explode, another thought hit me. It was what sent me spiraling over the edge, my balls drawing up tighter than they ever have, and my spine damn near breaking when I came so fucking hard I thought I was going to fall off the fucking bed. I'd imagined how she'd looked up on the water tower right before she jumped, battered and broken yet free. There was something so sexual about the way she'd accepted death that turned me on something fierce. I wanted to see her sad, taste her tears. I wanted to know what she sounded like when she cried. In pain, in pleasure, in both. The thought of me being the one to make her cry was my undoing. I sprayed long, hot streams all over her stomach and thighs, the last spurt landing right over her spread pussy. I tried to catch my breath, but when I opened my eyes, I grew instantly hard again when I found myself looking down at the most perfect fucking picture I'd just painted on her body with my cum. Quicker than I'd gotten on the bed, I jumped the fuck off. I quickly yet reluctantly wiped my cum from her stomach with a washcloth. Then I left the room in such a rush that I tripped over Myrna's pet pig in the hallway. Oscar grunted and oinked, and even in the darkness I saw the disapproving glare in his piggy eyes. "Fuck you, Oscar. Don't be all judgy," I whispered. More grunting. "One more look like that and I'll tell Myrna how you like to dry hump her teddy bear collection during her afternoon nap." The oinking stopped and he backed away into the bathroom where I'd set up the giant dog bed he slept on. I flashed him a smug, winning look and flipped him off. I headed out to the backyard where I could smoke some weed and get a grip on the weirdest fucking night of my life. I saved that girl twice in one night. I was exhausted. But hey, glass half full and all, I did get to kill someone. As I sat on the back step and packed my bow tie one-hitter, a thought entered my brain and started running on the day's playback reel. I didn't know why the fuck it was there, because it was telling me something I already knew, answering a question I wasn't even fucking asking. I can't keep you.
Chapter 7. Dre. Nightmares. At least I thought they were nightmares. Night after night, day after day, they took hold on both my body and mind, delivering an endless kind of agony I never knew was possible. I was sure I'd died, because the place I was existing in was pure fucking hell, reliving the very worst moments of my life over and over, never growing numb to the pain. The sounds haunted me first, twisting metal, breaking glass, screaming. The smells came next, cedar trees and burning plastic. Then it was like watching a slow-motion video of myself. I'm outside of my body, watching myself standing in the pouring rain. Water, streaked with red, ran down my face, my arms, and off the tips of my fingers onto the pavement. I was staring at something, but when I turned around to see what I'm staring at, the scene shifts. The sounds turn to evil laughter, grunting, the slap of skin, the tearing pain. The smell became musty mold, sweat, and uncirculated air. The video was now of Eric and Connor standing over me. Blood. That dank motel room. More grunting as they took turns with me. Laughing when I cried. louder and louder until I realized I wasn't dead. The sound was real. Someone was grunting over me. A deep, nasally rumble that grew louder and louder until the noise was pressed directly up against my ear, and I felt whatever it was vibrating against my cheek, cold and wet. Wet? What the fuck? Sitting up with a start, I looked around, but there was no one there. I automatically winced as I prepared for the onslaught of my withdrawals, but they never came. There was a slight pounding behind my eyes, but nothing like the stomach-twisting, near-death morning-after experience I was expecting. Something moved next to the bed, and I came face-to-face with the source of the grunting. Well, face-to-snout. Wedged between the small space between the bed and the wall was a good-sized pig, larger than most dogs. His black-and-white markings resembled a dairy cow. It rested its head on the bed by my leg, and I could swear the fucker was smiling at me. Its snout was wet and glistening as he sniffed around the bed, probably trying to figure out who the fuck I was. I covered my bare thigh with the blanket so he would stop wetting it with his piggy grossness.
"Don't think you're special. Oscar's a flirt. He does this with all the ladies," a familiar voice said, and my gaze snapped from the pig at my side to the man leaning against the doorframe, his arms crossed over his chest, his legs crossed at the ankles casually, comfortably. His cocky smirk sent shivers up my spine and made my heart race. "How am I here? Why?" I asked, racking my brain for a reason. The last thing I remembered was waiting for my bus, and then I had no idea.
"Simple. I brought you here."
Preppy's white shirt was perfectly pressed, the sleeves rolled up just above his elbows. He wore a pink bow tie with some kind of design, although I couldn't make it out. But whatever it was, his suspenders matched. He was a contrast of tattoos and class, like hipster meets teacher. A combination that worked for him, but had me questioning who the fuck he really was and what he wanted with me. I pulled the covers over my bare chest and noticed the strawberry shortcake pattern on the sheets. A quick glance around the small room confirmed where I was. My childhood room, back at Myrna's. "Myrna!" I shouted, forgetting about the sheet and sitting up on my knees in the bed. "Where is she?" I demanded. "Did you hurt her? This wasn't her fault. She didn't do anything." He smiled and ran his thumb over his bottom lip. I followed his gaze down to my naked chest. I needed answers more than I needed to cover up. He outwardly ogled me, and if he thought that I'd cower or grow uncomfortable under his inspection, then he'd thought wrong. Instead of grabbing for the sheet again or crossing my arms over my chest, I defiantly placed my hands on my hips.
"You're welcome for saving you twice in one night, by the way."
"I wasn't thanking you," I spat. "And what do you mean twice?" Just then Myrna's white hair appeared in the doorway. She placed a hand on Preppy's shoulder, and he stepped aside. Relief flooded me. She was alive and appeared unhurt. My first instinct was to run to her and throw myself into a hug, but I remembered how she was when I saw her last and didn't want to scare her by tossing my battered, naked body into her arms when she didn't even know who I was. No longer needing to prove my point to Preppy, I reached for the sheet and wrapped it around my body. "Hi," I said with a small wave, clutching the sheet to my chest. Myrna crossed the room, slowly walking over to the bed with her mouth agape. There was something different about her than the day before, more focused. I cautiously reintroduced myself. "I don't know if you remember me from yesterday, but my name is Andrea," Myrna said, cutting me off. She scooped me off the bed like I was still an infant, cradling me in her arms and burying her face in my neck. "I know who you are, my sweet girl. Oh, thank Jesus, my Andrea is home," she sobbed, her tears warm on my cheek. She recognized me. That's when my own tears started to flow. And for that moment, Connor, Eric, or even the man still standing in the doorway didn't matter. The sheet had fallen back to the bed and I again was naked, wrapped up in Myrna's loving arms like a newborn, surrounded in her superhero-like protection, safe and sound from a life I never wanted to go back to. There would be no baptism into death. I wanted to live, and there, in my grandmother's arms, I was reborn. Preppy cleared his throat and our spell was broken.
Samuel, go get my robe, please. It's hanging on the back of my door.
Myrna sat me down on the bed and sat down next to me, keeping my hand tightly in hers. Her eyes were wet and puffy, just as I imagined mine were. Preppy left and came back seconds later, chucking the robe at me. I quickly covered up, tying the sash around my waist. Myrna tentatively touched her fingertips to my cheek, as if she still couldn't believe I was real.
Samuel, she said, turning back to Preppy. This is my granddaughter. This is my Andrea. My girl's finally come home.
I leaned into her hand and we both sighed. I'd always hated being close to people, never cared to be touched or hold hands, but my grandmother had always been different. Maybe it was that she was older. Maybe I liked the way her wrinkled skin felt wise and safe.
Well, isn't this a lucky coincidence?
Preppy barked, running a hand through his hair and stepping fully into the room until he was only a few inches away, towering over us as he looked down, his lips twisted in confusion.
Yes, Myrna said. What's wrong, Samuel?
What's wrong?
Preppy asked, his eyes locking on mine. Suddenly, I realized that this reunion with my grandmother was going to be short-lived. He was going to tell her about the role I played in destroying her plants, and any hopes I'd had to reconnect with my grandmother would be left in that room when I was thrown out. Preppy paused and glanced between us.
Nothing's wrong, he said, his mood lightening. I knew you looked familiar. Should have known from the 6 million pictures of you hanging around here.
He turned to Myrna.
But she looks a bit different now, doesn't she?
He asked her, like he was setting up a joke for the punchline.
Yes, she does, Myrna said, taking in my appearance. Did I do this?
She asked Preppy, pointing to an IV drip next to the bed that I hadn't even realized was there. I raised my hand where tape residue and a bruise from the needle was still on the back of it.
That's the reason why you're not in a world of hurt right now,
Preppy said to me before answering Myrna.
Yep, you did this. You fixed her up good, like you always fix everyone up good,
Preppy said, his kindness toward Myrna taking me off guard. I didn't know what to make of this person. His every word, his every move was as contradictory as his clothes and tattoos.
When I found her in rough shape last week, I brought her here. Never thought she was your granddaughter, though. That's just a happy accident.
Last week? I exclaimed. Myrna's gasp mirrored my own. I've been here for a week?
Yeah. Myrna gave you some night-night juice and pumped you full of some vitamin concoction that had you snoring worse than Oscar,
Preppy said, bending down to pat the pig I'd forgotten all about.
Kept you from feeling the worst of it.
You've been here for an entire week and I'm only just seeing you now,
Myrna said to me. She turned to Preppy.
A week is the longest I've...
She started to say, before stopping and putting on a brave face, straightening her posture and wiping at her eyes.
It's okay, it's fine. You're here now, and that's all that really matters.
Yes, I agreed, wanting so badly for that to be true.
I'm going to step into the kitchen and leave you girls alone to catch up for a minute,
Preppy announced. He bent over and kissed Myrna on top of the head, and instinctually I flinched. Preppy chuckled and left the room. I really wanted to ask Myrna what her arrangement was with him. The plants, all of it. But not knowing the situation, I didn't want to bring up anything that might accidentally upset her. Tell me you're here to stay, Myrna said, eagerly awaiting my answer. That's when I realized that staying wasn't a choice. I had nowhere else to go. My dad, he thought I was coming home. He was probably waiting for me at the bus station. My heart hurt, and my body again felt sick when I imagined the look on his face when I didn't get off that bus. We will call him, dear. I'm sure we can talk to him and tell him. No, I said, shaking my head. We can't. That was my last chance. If I wasn't on that bus, I couldn't finish. I didn't want to say out loud that my dad was no longer my family. Let's get you sorted out first, and then we'll worry all about everything else later, Myrna said, again reassuring me when it was me who should have been reassuring her. But that was Myrna. Just tell me you're staying. Preppy answered for me, popping his head back in and unhooking a pink leash from a small rack on the wall. If she's smart like you, Myrna, she'll be sticking around for a while. He winked and disappeared again, with the cow-colored, dog-sized pig grunting after him down the hall. His words were disguised as a polite invitation, but I knew what they really were. A warning. When Myrna and I were finally alone, I turned back to her, prepared to launch into a million questions when she yawned. Her eyelids were heavy. I think you and I have some catching up to do, my dear, she said, rubbing her temples. The only cost of rent here is your honesty. I expect that you'll tell me everything. She turned my hand over and ran her fingertips up the raised scars on my arm, inspecting my shame. And I do mean everything. Yes, ma'am. Myrna patted my hand. It seems things have changed quite a bit for the both of us, haven't they? I glanced at the wall that separated us from him, like I could see him through it, and wondered what game he was playing at. Yes, it seems they have.
Chapter 8. Preppy. During the days that Dre was comatose, I poured myself into work, determined to have two more granny grow houses set up by the end of the summer, which was going to be hard, considering the amount of work each one took, and I had no one around to help me. Work was all I did. Well, and I watched some porn. And then there was that wee bit of blow I did, while watching porn, and the smidge of weed I smoked, with that waitress from Presto's who takes it up the ass like it's her fucking job. I motherfucking digress. While Dre went through her withdrawals as a vegetable, I checked in on Myrna like usual. She did manage to have a few moments of clarity, but most of the time she was back to thinking she was in her 20s and waiting for her husband to get home from the war. During one of her clearer times, she talked about Dre, and it was obvious that she adored her granddaughter, smiling and laughing while telling me stories of her devilish childhood, where apparently Dre had spent a lot of time breaking shit. There was even love in her voice when Myrna had told me that she'd received canceled checks back from the bank in the mail to the tune of $1,700, all made out to cash, all forged. She'd closed the account, but it wasn't until Dre showed up that she knew who was behind it. I wasn't exactly in a place to reprimand someone for their life choices, but ripping off her own grandmother made me so pissed, I was surprised that when Dre woke up that I hadn't immediately grabbed her by the throat and pushed her out the door. Shit. If Myrna hadn't come in and been with it, I just might have. I made a mental note to look into getting a trustee set up for Myrna's finances so there was no chance of anyone ripping her off while her condition continued to get worse. Fuck, she shouldn't even be living on her own anymore.
Why didn't I get on that bus? Dre asked from behind me. I turned to find her standing next to the table, her hands fighting with the sash of the robe that swallowed her small frame in billowing white cotton.
Her long black hair was wild around her face. Her deep brown eyes burned holes into me as she waited for me to answer. I turned my attention back to the stove where I'd burnt yet another pancake. Motherfucker. I tossed it into the trash bin and started over again, pouring a ladle of batter onto the hot pan. Seriously, is this making pancake business some sort of holy magic? Do I need a wand and a Harry Potter spell? I grumbled. Maybe there's something wrong with the stove. I adjusted the heat setting and again read the side of the box of mix to make sure I didn't do something to it that somehow made the magical pancakes flammable, almost instantly burning. Where's Myrna? I asked, ignoring her question and flipping my newest attempt, which landed on the side of the pan. Batter splattered on the burner with a hiss.
She's laying down for a while.
Excellent, I exclaimed, pointing at her with my spatula. It will give us a chance to have a little breakfast, a little chat, and a little bit of threatening. Doesn't that sound nice? I pulled out a chair from the little dinette table and made a grand sweeping gesture with the spatula for her to take a seat. Her eyes darted to the chair, but she didn't move. Sit down, I repeated. It's not a suggestion, I warned. She came forward hesitantly. I pushed in her chair with a little more force than necessary, pushing her legs out from under her, causing her ass to plunk down hard onto the seat. I leaned over her shoulder. Now is that so hard? I whispered against her neck. Her shiver gave me a deep satisfaction I felt all the way down to my toes. I made my way back over to the stove and looked over the sad stack of six lopsided, half-burnt pancakes that looked more like the sad survivors of the pancake apocalypse than breakfast. I took off Myrna's Kiss the Cock apron that used to say Kiss the Cook, but with one little swipe of a permanent marker, I had made it way more my speed. I set the stack of zombie pancakes in the center of the table and took the seat next to Dre. I placed a small stack in front of her and the rest I took for myself, pouring syrup over both plates. Okay, now we can talk, I announced, taking a bite of what tasted more like baking powder and foot than fluffy, delicious pancakes. You want to know why you're here, right? You're here because one of your buddies decided to dose you full of heroin, drag you across the parking lot into some shitbag motel, and play hide the salami while you drooled all over yourself. I turned my head and opened my mouth to mimic her facial expression. She winced. Truth fucking hurts, Doc. I shoved more of the awful-tasting pancakes in my mouth, and I knew exactly what they tasted like. Failure.
Doc?
She wrinkled her nose.
Yeah, like Dr. Dre, remember? Or do we have to start at the beginning again? Okay, let's do this. I am Samuel Clearwater. My friends call me Preppy.
I remember,
she said, her pancakes remaining untouched.
Anyway, saw what was happening and went and retrieved you. Brought you back to Myrna's, 'cause she's a nurse. Even when she's a little out of it, she still remembers her training. Didn't know you were her granddaughter, I said, speaking with my mouth full. If I didn't hate wasting food so much, I'd have spit it out, but instead I swallowed hard and chugged my orange juice.
You could have just left me there, she pointed out.
Yeah, I could have.
Why didn't you?
I stabbed my fork into another piece. I held it up and examined the food on my fork. I glanced up at Dre's doll-like eyes that were as black as her hair. I have no fucking clue.
Why didn't you take me to a hospital?
Hospitals tend to ask a fuck of a lot of questions when you bring in a girl who's doped up on H.
Why would questions be a bad thing when you're the one who saved me?
Because, Doc, questions lead to answers, and in this case, answers lead to bodies. She gasped.
Shit.
Her face paled. There's that realization I was waiting for. I was wondering when that would happen. Took you long enough. But I'll chalk up your slow reaction time to just waking up from a semi-coma. Remind me not to challenge you to a game of Sudoku anytime soon.
Bodies?
She asked slowly, standing up from the chair. I grabbed her by the shoulder and pushed her back down.
Well, body, I corrected. Just one, though. But, you know, bodies sound better for dramatic effect and all that.
I took another gulp of juice.
So let's just say that one of them is no longer available for shooting up in a dark alley, beating you to a pulp, stealing my plants, or long walks on the beach. I set down the glass. In the words of the oh-so-wise Taylor Swift, I leaned across the table. Never, ever. Like, ever. Eric? You killed Eric? She asked, and I knew she was confirming that it wasn't Connor. Whatever false sense of loyalty she had toward the motherfucker was really pissing me off. Until I realized that was exactly who I'd killed. Oops. Yep, it was totally Eric, I agreed, shoving more pancakes into my mouth and trying not to gag.
So he's...
dead? Oh yeah, very dead. There was nothing readable about Dre's expression, which was disappointing. I was looking forward to seeing her afraid. After all, I'd just admitted that I'd made good on my threat and had killed someone she knew, albeit not the person she'd wanted me to kill. But she didn't know that. Tomato, tomato. She was more out of it than I'd originally thought.
You killed him,
she said, slowly. It wasn't a question, it was a statement. I held up my index finger and my thumb, slowly closing the gap between them, peering over at Dre through the tiny slit that remained. Little bit.
I don't think you can kill someone a little bit.
Oh. Well then, a lot of bit. I killed him a lot of bit.
Chapter 9. Dre.
So, are you going to tell me now why you insisted on giving the Connor guy a pass?
Preppy asked, as I followed him into the back room of the house, where it looked like he was halfway done resetting up his operation. The other half of the room was still in shambles. Without being asked, I grabbed one end of the plastic tube he'd picked up and climbed the ladder on the other end of the room, setting it on the hooks. My robe fell open in the process, and I quickly tied it back together, hoping Preppy hadn't noticed. No such luck.
What? It's not like I haven't seen you in your birthday suit already,
he said.
I did witness your solo nudist party when we met, remember?
Guess it doesn't really matter, I admitted. I look like shit anyway. I wasn't saying that I was ugly. I was never a girl who lacked confidence. I was just stating the truth. Heroin isn't exactly the drug of choice of models and pageant queens, and for a good reason.
Yep. You do look like shit.
Preppy agreed, smirking like he was keeping a secret only he knew. Then why do you keep looking? I blurted, remembering his hardness against me on the water tower.
'Cause maybe that's what I'm into,
Preppy said, like it was nothing. Girls who look like shit? I asked, not believing him in the least.
Hey, some people like chicks with dicks. Some people like to fuck dressed like Smurfs and painted blue. I look because you intrigue me, but I don't have a fucking clue why. I'll keep you posted, though.
Are you always this brutally honest? I asked, finding his statements both offensive and oddly refreshing.
Yes and no. There are times when a lie can't be helped. Honesty is a fickle bitch like that. I don't believe in filtering, though. When you start walking on eggshells around people, that's when you know that those are people you don't need to be around. Life's too short to pretend to be anyone else. I'm just me. I say what I want to fucking say. I do what I want to do, and I don't fucking apologize for it.
I think I need to adopt that kind of honesty, I admitted. But I have a lot of apologizing to do.
You can start your trip down Honesty Lane by answering my original question, and telling me why you gave that guy a pass.
I sighed. For now, let's just say that Connor is someone I hurt. Oscar came running into the room, rubbing his head on Preppy's leg. The kind of hurt that can't be fixed. That can't be brushed over with an apology or flowers.
Must have been something real bad,
he pointed out, leaning down to pat Oscar on the head. I looked to the floor, then back up at Preppy. It was, I admitted. And like every time I thought about the event that led up to me making bad decision after bad decision, it was like I was bringing it back to life, so it could stab me in the gut over and over again. My thoughts quickly turned to using the immediate euphoria, the relief from the guilt. Preppy cleared his throat. I opened my eyes, although I didn't remember closing them, to find that Preppy was now standing next to the open window, lighting a joint and leaning against the ledge.
Where'd you go there, Doc?
He took a long drag.
You thinking about hooking up with your lover? I'll let you know that it's probably not a good idea. That bitch heroine gets around, and in the end, the breakup is brutal. But she'll never leave you. So you either dump her on the side of the road like a hitchhiking hooker, or you'll stay, and she'll kill you.
I know, I said, needing to desperately change the subject, the thought of using too fresh on my mind. This said by the man smoking weed. He held up the joint.
This shit won't kill me. You don't see anyone smoking weed and going on a murdering spree, or hitting a bong and going out to start a fight at a bar. Besides, weed's not a drug. It's a plant.
He picked up one of the glass bowls and shook the leaves. Is that what you tell yourself, so you can tell people you don't do drugs and actually believe it?
Fuck no. Wouldn't work anyway. I do bowlfuls of blow when I feel so inclined.
Preppy said, taking another long drag and blowing it out the open window.
There's a big difference between a party and a problem, though. Especially one that ends with an attempted high dive off the water tower.
Point made. I'd never needed a change in subject so badly in my entire life. Who's been taking care of Myrna? I asked. I felt stupid that I had to ask this question from a virtual stranger.
I look in on her, and so do a few of her friends and people from the church. She's on a waiting list for one of those assisted living places in Sarasota. They could have an opening tomorrow or in 6 months. They're not sure.
He looked like he was thinking about something before adding,
It's getting worse and worse, you know. She'll have a few days where she's out of it, but then suddenly she'll go for weeks being just fine. This past week she was in and out, but mostly out. That's the most I've seen her like that for,
Preppy said, confirming what I'd already thought but hoped wasn't the case. My heart sank. Can I have time with her? I don't deserve it. But once you tell her that I was one of the people involved in stealing from her, she won't want anything to do with me. But I just want some time. I paused. Before it's too late.
You can have time,
he said, eyeing me warily.
But I'll want some stuff in return.
What do you want? I'll do anything, I asked, immediately regretting my choice of words. His amber eyes reminded me of rich, dark honey as he stalked across the room. He stopped in front of me and startled me by untying the sash at my waist and pushing my robe over my shoulders onto the floor. I felt the heat of his stare as he raked over my naked body, lingering on the place between my legs. I pressed my thighs together and he laughed, biting his bottom lip. I shivered, unsure if it was because of his intense inspection of my body, the air conditioning vent kicking on above me, or from good old-fashioned fear. Just tell me what you want, I said, wanting whatever this was to be over. Preppy chuckled.
Take care of Myrna. Help me fix this shit, too.
The glimmer of something evil sparked in his eyes, the same spark I'd seen on the water tower, and that time my shiver was because of fear.
And get yourself together. I need you not to look like the kid from the Jungle Book for what I have planned for you. Think less Courtney Love, more Jennifer Love.
Ha ha, funny. Is that all? I asked, wary that I was getting off too easy and trying to avoid the need to knee him in the balls.
Oh, that's far from all, Doc.
He stepped back, and I bent down to gather my robe, covering myself quickly. Far, far from all. Preppy went back to his work, and I left to find some real clothes. I was looking through drawers in my old room, hoping to find a t-shirt or a pair of sweatpants, when Preppy appeared in the doorway.
I forgot to tell you something,
he said, punching numbers on his cell phone and placing it back in his pocket. What? I asked, pulling out an old boy band t-shirt from the bottom drawer.
You remember what I said about using H again, right?
You mean when you said that either I break up with her or she kills me?
Yeah. Well, I forgot to add one little thing, he said.
What's that? He stepped into the room and lowered his voice. He stood over me, leaning on the dresser. His shoulder brushed mine.
If you do use again, make sure you're far, far away from Logan's Beach and Myrna first. Because if you ever fuck her over again, I'll kill you long before the heroine will.
He smiled happily, as if he hadn't just threatened my life.
Mmm-kay.
Chapter 10. Dre. Preppy had told me to take care of Myrna, but he still stopped by every afternoon to check on her before locking himself in the grow room for at least an hour. Either he wasn't up for conversation, he was purposely avoiding me, or he hadn't figured out exactly what it was I could do for him in return for giving me time with Myrna. But then I realized that wasn't it at all. He wasn't avoiding me. He was toying with me. Every time he was near, he found a way to touch me and make me jump. He winked at me when Myrna wasn't looking. He undressed me with his eyes every chance he got, and then he'd laugh when I squirmed uncomfortably under his gaze. But talk? Nope. Not to me, anyway. Although with Myrna, he happily chatted and made small talk, like he wasn't there to torture me with his presence, the lingering favor looming between us. I should have been happy he didn't want to talk to me, but was oddly annoyed by the whole thing. I'd been out of society for too long. That must have been the real problem. My need for social interaction was probably the very thing that led me to believe that the psycho killer growing pot in my grandmother's guest bedroom was someone I could have a conversation with, when in actuality I should have just taken a page from Preppy's book and start talking to the damn pig. Myrna and I had used our gift of time wisely, and over the course of several days, we unburdened our souls and told each other everything there was to tell. Well, everything that wouldn't have her tossing me out just yet. She hadn't slipped back into her alternate state of confusion, and I was beginning to think I overreacted, or made it more than what it was in my head. Myrna now knew all the events that led up to me being back in Logan's Beach, and she told me about being diagnosed with Alzheimer's the year before. There was a lot of crying, a lot of laughing, a lot of looking at old photos, and a lot of grieving over my mother, even though she'd passed when I was just a baby. Myrna also told me that she wished she were still close to my father, but they were both in a lot of pain when my mother passed, and it was too hard on both of them to continue being a family without her. Physically, I was feeling better, although I was still fidgety. The want for heroin was there, but it no longer had its hands on the wheel, thanks in large part to Myrna and her keeping me good and unconscious during the worst of my withdrawals, and the vitamin shots she insisted on giving me twice a day. "There you are," Myrna exclaimed as she came out on the front porch where I was fixing the third step, setting it back in place. The top had warped and arched under the harsh Florida weather, and the nail had rusted out from the bottom, making it the perfect height to trip anyone coming to the house. A few well-placed screws would keep Myrna from tripping over it, like she had the day before, but luckily I'd been there to soften her fall. I'd also rehung a cabinet that had fallen from its hinge in the kitchen, tacked the falling gutter back to the side of the house, and then tackled the pesky step. Myrna had told me that keeping busy was good for a healing soul, and I think she was right, because I'd began to feel lighter, like my old self again. She clapped her hands together. I was just looking for you. What's up?